Good morning, Hong Kong. It's May the 15th in the Fragrant Harbor. I'm Andrew Work, here today with Michael Rouse. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Andrew.
All right, let's do this. On Monday's Back Chat, we're going to talk about the Hong Kong $2 fare subsidy scheme and calls to tighten up the use of JoyU cards. Under the scheme introduced in 2012, residents above 60 and those with disabilities enjoy a concessionary fare of Hong Kong $2 on most public transport. While praised for encouraging the elderly to get out and about, the scheme has been taken advantage of by some residents alleged to have used relatives' cards. The Labor and Welfare Bureau estimates that in the past 3 years, around 25,000 people might have abused the program. Hawkish lawmakers suggest tighter penalties and a limit on daily commutes. Crack down or crack on with expanding the program? Let us know what you think on our Facebook page, Backchat, on RTHK Radio 3. Email us at backchat@rthk.hk or give us a call on 233-88266. And you're going to want to stick around for the second part of the show when we get the lowdown on how the F&B sector did on Mother's Day with Anna Clover Lam Choluca from the Shore Hospitality Group of the many, the pizza pigs, the blind pigs, the other pigs, the salted pigs, and more. So stick with us for that. But in the meantime, we are getting into transportation issues. Joining us from our studio in Admiralty, welcome to Hong Kong legend David Webb, the editor of Web.site. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Andrew and Mike.
Great to have you on. Joining us as well, all the way from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on the line is Alok Jain, CEO and Managing Director of TransConsult. He used to be the Operations Director at Kowloon Motor Bus, knows a thing or two about buses and transport. Good morning, Alok.
Good morning, Andrew and Mike.
Good morning, guys. Great to have you both on the show. But I want to start, we're talking today about the fare subsidy scheme. And I just want to say, I'm really glad I'm on with Mike today because I remember, Mike, when you were coming into the zone for getting the seniors discounts. I think you were still about a year away. I would run into you on the bus and you would be telling me already how much you were looking forward to getting that discount. You were pumped up for it.
I was, and because I think, of course, being a beneficiary is one thing, or declare an interest, but I think it was a very good idea on two ways. One is that it encouraged people who reach retirement age not to be deterred from carrying on working by having an expensive commute, mm-hmm. The first thing. And secondly, for people who were locked up at home and did retire, it was a way of encouraging them or removing the disincentive to come out. Mm-hmm. And socialize. And I think those are two worthy things. Mm-hmm. I was very happy. I did have qualms when the qualifying age was lowered from 65 to 60.
Okay.
I wrote about that. I thought it was not a good idea on two grounds. One is that eventually it would become fiscally impossible to sustain. It was just a giveaway. A nice thing to try and win backing from the public or whatever, or those between 60 and 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be unsustainable. And secondly, it sent a message that maybe you should be retiring at 60 instead of 65. But the reality of life now is that people should be working up to 65 and beyond.
A lot of people do in this city.
Right. So I thought those were two wrong messages.
Okay.
From lowering the qualifying age.
Hmm. Do we have evidence, either David or Alok, do we have evidence that it had this impact that more people, more elderly people either stayed in the workforce or were more socially mobile? David?
I don't know that anyone could be able to prove that. Hmm. Obviously, if it's cheaper to travel, then the economics tell you that people will travel more. Mm-hmm. For the reasons they're doing that, it would be hard to deduce. I mean, even if you did surveys, they might not tell you exactly why they were doing it. The whole scheme was misconceived from the start. I've always said since 2013 when it was introduced that it was crazy. It was going to cost more and more as the cohort of people who qualify expanded, and then Carrie Lam expanded it by another 600,000 people or so by dropping the age from 65 to 60, which was really a populist move on her part. And she did a number of unpopular things in her term, but this was one of the populist things. The scheme in the last year for which we have accounts, and you can explore all of the government accounts on website.com, we have all the accounts back to 1998, mm-hmm. down thousands of line items, including this. It cost 1.4 billion Hong Kong dollars in the year to March 2022 before the threshold of age was reduced. Well, for most of that year anyway. I think it kicked in February of 2022. Mm. And we don't yet have the new accounts for March 2023. That's only just 1.5 months ago.
And comparables are going to be a little bit out of whack because of COVID. People were staying at home.
And yes, it did dip. In 2021, there was a big dip in the expenditure because fewer people were on the MTR and so on and working from home and whatnot. But also, of course, there is another scheme called which everybody qualifies for if they spend at least $200 a month. It's called the Public Transport Fare Subsidy Scheme. And that costs even more. That costs $3.5 billion in the last reported year. So you add the two together, it's $5 billion. And most of the people receiving that don't need it in terms of welfare.
Yeah,
it's not means-tested in any way. Mike Rouse, for example, is on a government pension and can certainly afford his own transport fares, one of those defined benefit pensions. I'm certainly can afford it. And for me, basically, it's a life goal now to reach 60 in 2 years and 4 months' time. and then have the damn card, but I don't actually need it. The government can't keep on creating non-means-tested expenditure and then wringing its hands about the lack of revenue to fund it. Mm. You can't just keep expanding the government footprint. You should focus the welfare on the people who really need it, on the amount of CSSA, for example, the Comprehensive Social Security Assistance, for those who are, on their last amount of savings or have no income and need the support. Mm-hmm. And that way we can afford to do more for them as long as we're not throwing money up in the air in schemes like this and the $5,000 or $10,000 handout. $10,000 costs the government $70 billion. That's equivalent to 14 years of these transport subsidies. Mm-hmm. It's also equivalent to about 7% of our accumulated fiscal reserves. So if we keep on doing that, we'll be out of reserves fairly quickly. And yet now that they've started, there's to keep the public perception of the government somewhat higher than it might be otherwise, they keep on handing out money.
There's definitely some PR value in it for the government, but is there real value for people of Hong Kong and the economy? Alok Jain, I'm going to give you a chance to weigh in and either back that up or play devil's advocate.
Yeah, well, to fully understand why this scheme was even launched, I think let's go back to 2003 when it was first introduced. And at that time, the principle was the $2 fare was applicable only on Sundays and week and holidays, public holidays. And at that time, the principle was that there was enough ample spare capacity on public transport system which could easily accommodate extra rise in passengers, and this $2 wouldn't cost anything, and it was totally unsubsidized from government purse. It was out of the initiative of transport operators completely.
Right, so there's nothing wrong with commercial operators doing whatever they want with their prices,
exactly,
if they were allowed to do that. Of course, they're not. The MTR has a fare adjustment mechanism.
But what happened was the scheme proved to be quite popular and successful, and the government then at that time took it upon itself to use it as a social scheme. And I think that's when things started to go wrong. And not only that, I mean, that's one side. One side is, of course, the fiscal impact of the government budget. The second part is that it also encourages a lot of elderly to travel during the peak, taking up the valuable capacity. As you know, any transport system around the world, it is designed to handle the peak hour capacity in the morning and the evening. And if you have additional passengers during that period, that creates an extra burden on the transport system. And that is what is happening. Mm. So there is no means at the moment to discourage elderly who may not need to travel during the peak to move towards the shoulders of the peak because there is no incentive for them to do so.
So we've actually got...
So that's an operational problem that has been created because of this.
Yeah.
And obviously, second thing we have to look at, I mean, I've been seeing that the calls to increase the fines beyond 500 Hong Kong dollar as if... I mean, I certainly agree that the abuse need to be stopped. But if you look at the fine system... Right now, what is the fine for illegal parking in Hong Kong? right? It's only $320. And this is, to me, an area where the focus of fines, we need to bring some parity. If a person who is abusing a public transport scheme where the price is only $7 full fare, and somebody is using it for $2, abusing it for $5, and you are imposing a $500 fine, but somebody parking illegally in Central gets only a $320 ticket, and they might be driving a $1 million car. I mean, I think that it's not commensurate or proportional to the kind of, violation that a person is doing. So, yes, there should be some mechanism to stop the abuse.
Well, the fines for abuse wouldn't be necessary if the subsidy wasn't available. So, we only have to introduce fines if we have subsidies in the first place. The amount of subsidy that's being lost into these abuses is very small relative to the scheme as a whole. It's probably in the order of millions or tens of millions versus 1,500 million last year and probably over 2,000 million this year with the expansion of the age cohort. And so you have to put that in perspective. Alok, you're quite right about the deterrent effect. If you have only a small probability of being ticketed for $320 at, say, once every 10 hours or so of illegal parking, that works out at $32 an hour. That's pretty good value for being able to conveniently park on the street in Prince's, outside Prince's building with your Alphard or whatever. So that needs to rise. It hasn't been adjusted since 1994. The legislators refused to do it the last time the government asked them to do it. And maybe it's because they have chauffeurs who like to park illegally and, that helps them, whereas, the fines for other things don't matter to them so much. Not so long ago, you had a high probability of being caught and fined $5,000. It's quite obvious if you're not wearing a mask, and you could be fined for doing that. Now, of course, you can be fined for wearing a mask in a public assembly, a similar amount. but that's $5,000, and you're talking about $500 for using a hidden green octopus card, which is quite hard to detect. You'd have to look at the person and listen for the high-pitched beep and judge whether they were over 60 or not. And so, of course, they have a very low chance of being ticketed $500. That maybe would cost them an average of, a 1% chance of being detected is $5. So that's still quite a good deal if you're only paying two.
Mm. And not to forget, there is a huge cost of detection.
So the enforcement costs are prohibitive. So really, what they're doing is what they can do, which is to have personalised one card each rather than multiple green cards per person. So if an elderly person or disabled person lends their JoyU card to someone else, they won't be able to use it that day.
That day?
Until they get it back.
If you get it back from the relative.
I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. You can only it can't be in two places at once.
There's only one person who can use the card at any given time,
Right.
Yeah.
So that reduces the risk of fraud quite a lot. But obviously the question is, why do we even bother charging $2? Why not just make it zero or minus two to incentivize elderly people to get out? I mean, if you're talking about an incentive, why not pay them to get out and use the transport system? Because that's basically what we're doing when we charge $2 for a ferry ride to Lantau that would normally cost $40.
Well, David, I'll give you a quick answer for that one. I know that in Alberta, when they introduce user fees at the hospitals of $5 Canadian, that's like roughly $4 US. Admittances to the emergency wards went down by 50%. I mean, it was almost nothing. We're talking like 25 Hong Kong dollars, and admittances went down by
50%. It depends on the relative cost of going to a GP. If it's free in Canada, then, of course, the $5 is a deterrent to using the hospital A&E. Here they have the same issue with the hospital authority. Mm. So there's a minimum charge. I think it's 100 Hong Kong dollars. Yeah. It's not quite enough to deter people.
A tiny charge was a huge deterrent, I mean, as opposed to no fee, which it was before. But I do want to get, and I know Mike wants to, but we have a you guys raised the question of cost of monitoring And I'm going to add in the cost of selecting. So if you say this should only be going to people with CSSA, I've got a comment from Marcus who says, how about means testing and allowing FDH and unemployed $2 rather than tycoons? I mean, is the program at the point now where
I don't think you need to tell poor people how to use the subsidy they get. Okay. If you provide a cash allowance in the form of CSSA or whatever elderly allowance you want to call it, means tested, then they can decide whether to spend it on walking to a swimming pool and using that, or I think those might be free now anyway, but you know, or using it on transport or having a better lunch or whatever it is that they that is important to them. Not saying here's a subsidy, but you can only use it if you take a public transport journey, and then, of course, increase the load on the system.
So you're saying we already have a means testing system in place, just give them more cash there and say, oh, now you get a little bit more for transport, but really you can use it however you want.
Yes. I mean, if you can, if you means test people, you can afford to increase the amount.
So there is something that means tested for the elderly, but there's also the fruit money, isn't there, which isn't means tested.
Right. Over 70, it's not.
Yeah. There are two components there. Yes, you are right.
And again, that's something that Donald Jung, in his term, tried to tackle by saying, well, look, we are going to increase fruit money, but only on a means-tested basis. Mm-hmm. And people, certain legislators of the time, threw some fruit at him in LegCo.
Literally.
and he backed down and increased it for everybody.
Well, how?
And that is expensive, and increasingly so, because of the 70-year-old cohort expanding. And again, I know many rich 70-year-olds who are entitled to it, and of course they take the free lunch, or beer money, or wine money. But it shouldn't be public expenditure. You know, we don't need to waste money that way.
As a first step, if the JoyU cards were limited to those who got the fruit money, 70 and above.
Well, you could certainly start that. Yeah,
I mean, if could you we want walk to, back but, this,
if you've done,
age
not
thing.
Going to address
if, you,
the
if you've done a bad
problem,
thing,
Mike,
maybe
I
just
mean, we are shifting sand here.
Yes, because I thought of another abuse.
Address the fundamental issue.
That is, people will take the first bus that's going where they want to go.
Yes,
not the cheapest bus.
Well, this is the bizarre thing, Mike, that the government is now putting out advertisements to elderly people saying, please wait for a short-haul bus.
Right.
Don't get on the first bus that arrives, which will cost you the same amount, $2.
Yes.
And that's just nonsense. They're not, you know, they're rational beings. They don't want to stand up all day waiting for an extra bus to come along. They'll get on the first one that arrives.
Of course they will. I'm thinking Queen's Road East, where there are three or four buses going along on the way you want to go, and one of them is the good old number 10, which is, I think, the lowest fare on Hong Kong Island, and two of the others are tunnel buses. But as far as the user is concerned, it's just $2 to get on whichever is the first one going where he wants to go.
Right, they don't care. And you know, you can go all over.
But you know to who this matters is the bus operator or public transport operator, because they get the differential subsidy from the government. So, you know, when any elderly uses the system, they're entitled for half fare on the buses. And when you pay $2, the differential between the half fare and the $2 is actually paid for by the government to the operator. Mm. So operators actually like this small trips made by the elderly on these buses.
Yes.
And because they will take it for two stops and get off, and the operator gets the full money out of the government funds, and then they can still have the capacity in the system which other people can use. So it's an extra income that is generated for the operator.
When you look at this and the fact the government controls the MTR, and then we have this implicit subsidy to the bus systems, are we moving towards a system like, I think some European cities have actually just given up. They've said, all right, all public transport paid for by the government, free to everybody. I mean, are we moving in that direction?
That doesn't address Locke's point, which is a legitimate one, the difference between peak and off-peak.
You could just do it all fully subsidized, but then you would have none of the incentive structure to balance the load off peak and on peak mm-hmm. and so on. I mean, the MTR, as Elliot said, in 2003, voluntarily had a lower fare at weekends for the elderly. Right. It was their rational self-interest that did that. I don't think anyone really pushed them into it.
Exactly. That was a pure marketing scheme, yeah.
Yeah, there is or was a scheme on the MTR where you get a lower fare if you travel off-peak in the mornings. I don't know if they still do that, but to try and smooth things out.
I think they do. They publicize it for a little while. But again, it's like when I went to get my taxes back from the government rebate scheme, and they went and said, oh, you don't have enough room in your octoprice because we're also going to give you $250 as your MTR subsidy. I was like, what? What is that? I didn't even know.
Yes. One third of everything above 200 at the moment.
Frequent travel.
Absolutely.
More than a certain amount per month.
And I think because I was coming in early to do radio shows in RTHK that I was getting an early morning subsidy or rebate? I'm not even sure, so I'm questioning how much.
I think they had an early bird discount on the MTR.
Well, you don't get a rebate for early morning. You just are charged less fare.
Okay. Right. Yes. I didn't even know is the point.
There's some type also with minibuses. I've noticed if I go back home to the office from the studio and I use the minibus to the MTR and then use the MTR, it seems to be cheaper on the MTR for that. I don't understand.
Yeah, there is an intermodal discount. Mm-hmm. With some of the minibus routes, when you interchange with MTR, there is an intermodal discount.
You get 30 cents off if you have a change of mode.
None of this is subsidized, Mike.
No, I knew I was getting it. I just didn't know why.
None of these intermodal discounts are subsidized.
They're not subsidized, so fine. I mean, you know, look, we're all in favor of...
They're part of the marketing scheme that MTRC runs. It's part of their overall fare package.
Mm. How long have we got here? We've got about 3 minutes. I'm wondering if I should save this email for the second half. No, I'll pile it in now. Phil B is got his claws out specifically for you, David. He says, please tell Webb to stop whinging. He has a massive chip on his shoulder. Stop complaining and come up with sensible solutions. And David, in your defense, to start off, I'll say we invite you to come on the show, and you're one of the most intellectually and best researched whingers in all of Hong Kong history.
Thank you.
Give us a solution. Whinging. Yeah. Yes. So you definitely always have solutions. Let's get to that before the half hour and then more after. Give us
perhaps
a solution.
Perhaps Phil B would like it if we could afford to cut the tax rates because we weren't spending all this money on handouts for people who don't need them.
Mm-hmm. So means testing, cut taxes, and we could actually give more to people
who need
it.
There's something you can do also on penalties, which is not linked to the $500. Any incident of abuse of the card, that person loses their entitlement to a JoyU card forever.
Yeah.
How about that? And the person who used the card wrongly ceases to be eligible ever.
What if their grandson had nicked the elderly person's card and was using it?
No, that would definitely be my defense.
Family discipline.
Yeah, but I mean, any fine system, I think, I'll go back to this. I mean, I'm not against imposing any fines for any kind of abuse, but it has to be commensurate. What is happening at the moment is people, we are talking about increasing fines of, you know, punitive action against people who are taking public transport, and we then let go of everyone who uses car and them cheaply. So, yeah, fines should be increased, but it should be across the board. We should probably, review the entire abusive structure or punitive structure for transport fines.
Well, in the case of illegal parking for million-dollar cars, almost any amount of fine isn't going to be a big deterrent if it doesn't happen regularly. So it would be better to...
Yeah, take the licenses away. I mean,
at least tow them away and make it inconvenient you have to go and collect your Alphard from some remote spot in the New Territories.
Exactly right. And the owner has to go personally.
Yes.
Not send a chauffeur.
Yeah, the director of the company that owns it, you mean.
Yes.
Either way, the passenger is out of a ride and will have to use public transport for a while. So, you know, there you go.
Yes, he'll get his JoyU card quickly after that.
They'll be out of commission. Okay, so I think consensus to this point, and I'm glad that you guys are going to be joining us after the half hour, after a very quick break for the news. It's only the 1 minute news during Back Chat every day. So let's see. So far we have a means tested system. Direct the money to people who actually need it. Try to keep maybe the $2 scheme 24 hours a day isn't appropriate because we're having old people loading up on the transport during peak hours. So maybe we can get more people in the right place at the right time with more money and not so much money for people that can afford it like me that don't even know we're getting a subsidy until we cash it in. We're going to continue after the half-hour break with the news with David Webb, the editor of Website, and Alok Jain, who is the CEO and managing director of TransConsult, formerly of Kowloon Motorbus, where he was the deputy of operations director, so he knows about operating and the money coming in the door. We're going to have a quick look at the weather. We are looking at sunny intervals today. Oh, good. Yesterday was quite rainy. The maximum temperature today will be around 26 degrees, light to moderate northeasterly winds. Next couple of days, we're going to have some sunny intervals, and the temperature will be rising. Stay tuned for the news, and then we're going to be back with more Back Chat. Right now, it's 24 degrees Celsius and 83% humidity. And we're back on Back Chat. That was the news with Ben Che. I'm Andrew Work. I'm here with Mike Rouse. We're doing Back Chat, continuing with David Webb, the editor of Website, and Alok Jain, CEO and managing director of TransConsult, talking about public fare subsidies. We're also joined on the line now by Timothy Ma, the chief consultant at Ma Kamwa & Co. Good morning, Timothy.
Hey, good morning.
Timothy, you're coming a little bit late to the party. We've been thrashing it out. So far, the consensus is that the consensus seems to be that the government already has a means-tested system for directing money to people who need it. Maybe we should be doing more of that and less of giving money away to people who don't need it and who are maybe clogging up the public transport during peak hours when we're trying to move people off public transport at peak hours. What else do you want to bring to the conversation about this $2 subsidy scheme and the Joyou scheme?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to make clear the positioning of the $2, not subsidy, but the concessionary to the people aged 60 or above. I think this is a good move that the government recognized the contribution and also the need of the people aged 60 that still need to be moving around. And to me, I'm now aged at 66, and I start to enjoy this benefit from last year. And I'm also, see that why the government suddenly lower the age limit to 60, because I think they recognize that most of the people aged at 60 still need to move around, and also it is a way to encourage socialization, hoping that they can still keep active. But to me, I think if you can see that for those who are still active in 60 to 65, they are still working. I think what we need is to give 50% discount instead of $2 subsidy. Then I think this will make the situation more presentable and also more objectively.
So, Timothy, are you saying that we should ask people to prove that they are not working in order to get the $2 scheme between 60 and 65?
I just want to say that maybe for those aged below 65, no matter they are still working or not, but maybe the benefit to them can be 50% discount is already good enough, because I think some of them really have a lot to contribute to their family. And then just like taking their grandkids to schools in the early morning, and all this contribution, maybe half of the cost should be shared by the family instead by the government. Yeah.
I mean, that would be for them to work out. Another reason that we want older people to have this discount maybe is because a lot of them are continuing to work, but in typically low-income jobs. You know, and we see evidence of that every day around Hong Kong. Elderly people working in cleaning positions, you know, things, security.
Yep.
Low-income jobs.
They qualify often for subsidies in their wages as well. So there's a top-up scheme for that. We have a welfare system that makes sure that there's a safety net for people who can't earn enough to look after themselves for whatever reason.
And one more view I would like to express is that the public transport company, now they actually do not contribute any single dollar into this scheme. Instead, government have to pay them full fare. So how about we are talking about ESG or CSR, so them also contribute some to this scheme?
Okay. I think, Alok, you've got some clarification on how much the bus companies get or the transport companies.
Let's get the facts correct there. The difference that the government has to pay is the bus companies and the train companies are already offering half fare, and the government only subsidizes the difference between the $2 and the half fare.
Only over 65,
Alok. Charging, yeah.
The half fare only applies to those over 65.
Informed to the general public, because I don't think most of people know about this arrangement.
I'll tell you, Mike Rouse does. He carries two cards.
I think it's all there.
But the half fare scheme only applies in most cases to people over 65. There was a small number of city bus routes.
City bus had $60
Okay, Mike's got his two cards out in
front
of him.
That's right. I've got two cards. I've got my JoyU card and my green card. I want to combine them because I'm now so old. I qualified three times over. But I want to combine them, but it's the old green card that's my registered for my handouts, where I would not like to say I totally agree with David. I thought the $10,000 was extraordinary, and to do it again, albeit on with only $5,000, was almost scandalously imprudent.
The government's been paying for my supermarket shopping. Not me, but my helpers.
I absolutely agree. I mean, those $10,000 and $5,000, and I can go on. This was the biggest abuse that we offered to people. People who don't even live in Hong Kong, people who are living in Canada and Singapore, are getting this subsidy from Hong Kong government.
The $10,000 was enough to fly back at that time, although the fares have gone up now.
But you had to do 3 weeks quarantine. That was a bit of a problem.
If you have a family of five, then it's still worth it.
So, gentlemen, bringing us back to this. So how much are these various programs costing the government? And is there any kind of a hard cost benefit analysis, even one that kind of dips into the fuzzy area of value?
You have to look at the overall fiscal system. It is badly in need of overhaul. And the way we do welfare, including housing, there's been talk recently about closing so-called loopholes in the means testing scheme for public rental housing. But the real issue is, why do we still have government acting as a landlord as well as a welfare provider by owning all of the public rental housing and then charging people a token rent of 10% of the median income, which is much less than most people spend in the private sector, and then wondering why they don't downsize when their kids leave home and apply for their own units, because why not? You've got a three-bedroom unit, you're only paying $2,000 a month for it, and you can afford that with your almost with your fruit money for a couple. So why bother downsizing? And therefore, we've got very inefficient use of land from people living in PRH because the government can't politically bring themselves to test people properly and force them to downsize. And we just keep building more of it. And it'd be much better to provide means-tested public rental vouchers and allow people to live anywhere they want with that voucher, topping it up if they choose, and per capita, so that when their children grow up, the benefit goes to them and not to the parents. People can move around the Hong Kong, get closer to their latest job as a security guard or a cleaner or whatever it is that they're doing, bus driving, and not worry about the commuting costs, so we don't need to worry about subsidizing those transport fares and so on. You know, the whole thing needs to be more flexible and more efficient. And the housing is probably, because of its hidden subsidy in the discounted rents, is probably the largest piece of our welfare system if you actually cost it properly.
Right. Okay. Comment from Housing Estate. Brett, he says, having had the Capital Works indirect land tax monkey on our collective back since 1982, anyone who manages to survive to the age of 60 deserves a little break for the remaining days. Thanks, Brett. And this one might go to David. TC, regular contributor, says, I think there should be restrictions on this use of this benefit for the elders. For example, the discount should only apply outside of the morning and afternoon rush hours. Yeah, lots of consensus here. This would prevent overcrowding. Furthermore, I think something should be done about the waste in fares, such as someone uses the JoyU card to get on long cross-harbor routes but gets off after two stops, which we discussed earlier. I have seen, that's the end of TC, beginning of Andrew Work. I have seen other systems where you buzz in and off buses.
Yeah, and you can on some of these long-haul
routes.
Singapore
does that, yeah.
Only paying $2, there's no incentive to buzz out. You just get off the bus. And who's going to stop you?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to check?
I mean, would you maybe reduce the subsidy that you would give to the bus company then? It doesn't change for the person who's using it. They buzz in, buzz off. To them, it's still $2, whatever. But the government's like, oh, they only rode two stops, bus company, you're getting less.
The government won't know unless they're using tracking devices on their phones or something. They won't know
exactly,
that they got off the bus early.
So that's why I'm asking. Should we have a buzz out system like that?
Well, I have to ask. First of all, we'd have to install buzz out devices everywhere,
yeah,
on every bus.
That would be expensive.
One at the exit as well as the one at the entrance.
You have to have a sort of turnstile, yeah, to make sure you do buzz out. Otherwise, you'll just step through the door. So, you know,
yeah,
or put a conductor on the bus. That would create some jobs, but, yes, you know,
well,
it'll cost
a bit. Having to...
That was just
your
by
car
the subsidy,
you
let me tell you.
Can help. Yeah.
Sorry. Timothy, go ahead.
Sorry. I think when you get off the bus, you have to touch on the machine to get off the fare. I think it's a good way to remind the people that you have to be cautiously using this public transport and also to scare the resources. But I think the issue is that whether it requires a change of the ordinance or it requires some installation cost of the public transport company, and who's going to pay for this? Yeah.
I mean, how much is this baked into the profits and dividends being kicked out by the bus companies? If we significantly reduce these subsidies in some of the ways that we're talking about, would the bus companies be on their knees, or would they?
They're already losing money, I think.
Yeah.
Well, bus companies should not be giving out any subsidies per se if they cannot justify. They are supposed to all operate on commercially prudent principles. That's something enshrined into Hong Kong's public transport system. So obviously, bus companies would not offer this subsidy. But the only way they can balance the books at the moment is by keeping the fares the way they are. I mean, which is they are offering 50% discount to the elderly once they reach the age of 65, and anything that the government wants to do as a part of the political or social initiative, and that has to be borne by the government welfare scheme.
The answer, Andrew, is at the margin, you would have to raise the other fares because there's a cross-subsidy between the subsidy from the government and the fares that everybody else pays. Because if you had elderly people paying half fares rather than $2, there would be fewer journeys and so less revenue for the bus companies. And the MTR, and consequently, if they want to even that out, they'd have to charge a bit more on their fare structure. But that whole thing is, not market-based. It's all bus fares, all taxi fares, have to be approved by the chief executive in council. We do not have a free market in Hong Kong in the transport system. There are many issues surrounding that, including... the caps on the numbers of minibuses. That hasn't changed since 1996. Numbers of licensed taxis, again. Numbers of hire car licenses. That's why Uber is basically illegal, and its competitors, Grab and Lyft and so on, haven't even started. Because of the government's restrictive practices and protectionism of taxi license owners, there's a whole number of aspects of the transport system that need overhaul here.
Certainly are. I'm just thinking that parking on a meter is, I think, $2 for a quarter of an hour.
Yes, the government tried to raise that, and LegCo said no. I don't know why.
And now it's $30 per hour in a commercial car park.
Huh? It ought to be... It's actually more convenient to park on the street, so it ought to be a premium, you know, but it's not. And, of course, then triads tend to monopolize the parking meters.
That's to keep the triads happy, yeah.
And they rent out the meters to the restaurants in the areas.
So let's see. We got to keep Alpha owners happy with the cheap parking fines. We've got to keep the elderly happy with their low-cost tickets. We've got to keep the triads happy. We've got to keep the bus companies happy. The MTR has got to continue.
And the owners of the bus licenses and the taxi licenses, because those are worth millions of dollars.
Well, there we are. Everyone's happy. What's the problem here?
I mean,
only the taxpayers have the problem.
Timothy Ma, are we hitting a balance of equally acceptable unhappiness across all these interest groups?
Yes. Well, I think we have to think again why the government introduced this wonderful scheme. Their purpose is to encourage mobility and socialization. And if we set too much limit and also discouragement, and then how we can find the old people can be engaged. And I think we seems that we are looking only for the economic expenses, but not talking about social return from this good scheme. I think we have to adopt a more balanced will to these measures. Yeah.
All right. I think we're going to have to wrap it up, guys. Called time there. But it's been a great discussion. I mean, we could have done this for another hour. I mean, but I'm just imagining if they did introduce a scheme whereby the elderly couldn't travel during those peak hours. Imagine them rushing to get on the train before the end of the peak hour. You know, before the end of the, before the prices went up. And then, you know.
It's good exercise, isn't it?
It would. I can see myself fighting my way through, like, you know, as they're all, I'm late for work and they're all trying to get on before the end of the cheap rates hours. Thank you very much to David Webb, editor of website, Alok Jain, CEO and managing director of Trans Consult, former deputy operations director, Kelly Motorbus, and Timothy Ma, chief consultant at Ma Kamwa and Co. for joining us on the show today. Stay tuned. We're going to get into it, talking about the restaurant business on Mother's Day. This is Back Chat.